What's up, everybody? This is episode 4 of the Tucson Pinball Podcast. We're going to talk about my thoughts on Pinburg since it's over and done with. And it was a lot of fun. It was definitely interesting. I mean, that was, man, that's a marathon. It's not brutal. It is brutal. It's tough, but it's fun, so it doesn't feel like bad. I don't know. It's such a weird feeling to go through all of that and be like, wow, I've played pinball competitively for like just a touch over 2 days, you know, and you're in that mindset constantly. So it was a ton of fun. I'm not going to do too much of a recap because I did a recording immediately after my event time ended. And I'm going to cliffhanger that one by saying nothing about at which point that happened. So anyways, that'll all come up in my little thing that I recorded at the show right after I was done, and then proceeded to have even more fun as the day and the weekend and everything went on. So let's see, what do I want to talk about today? So there's a couple notes I took kind of as things were going, and I want to talk about those things, and then we'll just kind of go into the closing arguments, if you will, of my final thoughts. So, and keep in mind that those final thoughts don't have that would be a spoiler. The event didn't end right after I finished playing. So I continued to play games and had fun and explored more of the areas, and I sat in for a couple of the seminars that they put on, which were actually a little smaller in size than kind of what I was expecting, I guess. I don't know. They're still very entertaining, very good, and I actually missed a few that I wanted to see. But going from the Texas Pinball Festival to the Pinburg seminars, it was smaller, and I mean that's fine. There's nothing wrong with what happened. It was very very entertaining, very good presenters. So the presentation types of individuals and what they do wasn't focused solely on pinball, and so I saw a couple other guys that are like video content creators and like code guys, and you know, not just pinball code guys, arcade code guys, and I mean it was a pretty wide variety of stuff, so that was cool. But the size of the area that was done in was a little smaller than Texas, which again, nothing wrong with that, just kind of different than what I was expecting. Maybe either way, it's all good, because it was all fun. So here's some of my notes. I wrote down who was fun to watch and why. And I wrote this while I was watching the semifinals. It was the bank with, I can't even remember all of them. It was a Chris Stevenson, Josh Sharp, Robert Gagneau, and Carl D'Angelo, I think. And Carl absolutely blew up this Spider-Man that was set to just in... What's the line from Pirates of the Caribbean? Where the guy's like, that's not possible, or that's impossible. And Johnny Depp's like, improbable. And I love that line. So the improbable setup of Spider-Man, because it wasn't impossible, but it was very improbable that people were going to do well on that. And Carl did amazing. It had lightning flippers, like no posts. I mean, obviously they took out the rubber on the center post, but like there was no posts on the outside at all. And the things that these guys were doing on this machine was so fun to watch. I mean, I've seen it on the Twitch streams and stuff like that, but to see it live, because you've got the display monitors, so you know what's going on. Like, you can follow the ball, you can follow the action on the play field, but you also get that extra perception of the player's body language. And watching some of these guys play is so entertaining and adds so much more value and fun factor to it that if you can do it, please do, because it's awesome. And when I'm talking about that, I'm specifically thinking of games 3 and 4 in this bank and Josh Sharp. And game 3 was high speed, game 4 was Paragon, watching Robert Gagneau tap pass on the fly. I mean, I know people have talked about this, but watching him tap pass on the fly to get from left to right in order to shoot those drop targets and shoot that area, I was sitting there like, how do you even, like, think of trying to do that, let alone, you know, I mean, man, that was, I was so impressed. I was sitting there like, wow, that's probably the most impressive skill set that I have yet to see. I just witnessed it. And that's just one more thing. It's like, wow, that's one more feather in the cap of why these guys are so good. But Josh Sharp is so good and so fun to watch because he is not a stoic player. Like, everybody has a certain dance when they play, you know, like everybody has body language. If you don't have body language when you're playing pinball, I don't know. You have to. I mean, even if you just kind of stand there and you're very stoic, you know, when there's a big save that needs to happen, you can tell, like, they jump into ready position, and if they have to nudge the game slightly harder, like, move the game, you know, you can tell that there's just, boom, that they're ready to go. But some guys, like, they don't ever sit still. And Josh Sharp is one of those players, and I've never seen him live before, and he's a lot of fun to watch. You know exactly what his brain is thinking because his mouth is saying what his brain is thinking. You know, he was sitting there up there, not like this, you know, when it was just gonna be kind of a dinky bounce off of something, and like it was danger going down straight down the middle-ish, and he'd be like, not like this, when the ball is like still in the upper play field. You know what he's watching, and you kind of see it happen, and you're just happy when he makes that save, and he's like, I'm glad it wasn't like that, you know, and he had some amazing plays, and it was just fun to watch. I mean, I don't know, it's entertaining, it's fun to watch, and pinball can definitely be a spectator event, spectator sport, whatever, I don't really care if it's a sport or not, it's fun. But it is definitely capable of bringing enjoyment when you get to see the players. If you're just watching a play field, it's very hands-off, it's very almost robotic, because there is no human interaction that you're seeing. When you take one step further back and you can still see the play field and the player and how their life is like completely focused on this and they are channeling everything into their body language, you know, that I think that's what makes watching pinball exciting. So there's some really fun guys to watch and gals. And if you, I'm sure you play with some of them locally. But anyways, that's one of my biggest takeaways. And it took until a semifinals for me to go, you know, some of these guys are awesome. And you know what? You can tell that Josh is a Sharp because I got to watch Roger Sharp play. And I've seen him play on video and everything. I watched him play a game in the after, I don't even know what to call it. It was like the Universe Pinball, like, Intercontinental Championship or something like that. It was a fundraising tournament. It was, a buy-in was $10, and that got you 10 tickets, and there was like 12 machines to play, and your top 5 games counted or something like that. It was, the finals were going to be after I'd already flown out, so I didn't really have the energy to sit in line and kind of keep track of another event. I was kind of spent. I was just like, you know what, my brain is done. Let's just push buttons and flip the flippers. But I saw Roger playing, and I didn't even know that he was playing because I'd watched some stuff on the stage for the main event, and then I looked over and I'm like, oh, hey, that's got to be Roger Sharp playing. And he turned and he walked away from the game, and I'm like, my brain is like, you should go say hi, go say thank you, ask for a picture, and appreciate the fact that you might not have this opportunity for the rest of the weekend. And who knows the next time you're going to be at an event where Roger Sharp will be there. So he finished up, and I don't think he was overly happy with how he played on the machine. And, you know, he was also playing in Pinburg as well. So, I mean, everybody's had kind of a long weekend at that point. And I didn't want to – where I'm going with this is I didn't want to be, like, a burden. I just wanted to kind of – pounce real quick and say, hey, can I get a picture? I just want to say thanks. I really appreciate you and everything like that. So I walked up to him. I said, Roger, can I get a picture with you? And then I just kind of went into like total fangirl mode and just was like, blah, 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 blah. And I was like, I just wanted to tell you that I really appreciate everything you've done for this hobby throughout time, and I said, you know, we're all here because of something that you had a massive impact on, and I think he was a little not quite embarrassed, not really shy about it, but he was just like, oh, wow, maybe I shocked him, I don't know, whatever. And he's like, what's your name? Because, you know, the proper way to introduce yourself to somebody is to say, hi, my name is John Smith. And I had completely missed that part of the etiquette, and I was just like, you know, like I said, total fangirl mode. And I said, my name is Wayne. And he said, hi, Wayne, nice to meet you. And we chatted for another few seconds, and I kind of wanted to break contact only so I didn't, you know, I don't know. I just feel weird talking to people that I don't know. Anyways, Roger Sharp's awesome. And Josh Sharp is definitely a sharp. So, anyways, two very fun people to watch playing. So, what's next on this list? So, my note says, what the Pinburg Bank design requires from a player's skill set. And that was just me kind of sitting there going, you know what? This is not designed like most other tournaments I know of. And that's kind of obvious. That's stating the obvious. But that's kind of a precursor to the fact that, you know, every bank is set up the same way, but let me say this, if you are like the best DMD player in the world, but you've never touched an EM, you're not going to do very well at Pinburg. Whereas in other tournaments, you could say, you know, like a pump and dump, and there's, 15 machines, and four of them are DMDs, let's just say. Or if there's like a modern and classic side, and most of them are D&Ds. You can go in, you can crush it and be ranked number one. You can't do that at Pinburg. And that's just it's such an interesting requirement that, hey, you've got to be, you can be great at something, but you've got to be reasonably rounded at like EMs and early solid states and stuff like that. And that's not to say that, you know, competitive players don't ever play EMs, or if there's like an EM grandmaster and he never plays DMDs, well, he probably won't have a bunch of success, maybe even fun at Pinburg. Who knows? I don't know. So I thought that was kind of cool, and it hit me about halfway through that you can set up two Pinburg style banks at Tucson Pinball. And so I don't remember what day or when, but I sent my buddy a text, the guy I split the business with. His name is Robert. I sent Robert a text, and I said, dude, we should set this up just like Pinburg, because it's pretty sweet. And it's a reasonable layout, and I think then we could hold Pinburg-style tournaments. Not to the same extent or anything like that, but, you know, and I said, what do you think? And I said, you know, we need a DMD, a modern-ish DMD, then you need an EM, then you need a solid state, a classic solid state, and then you need, or no, I'm sorry, a semi-modern solid state or a older DMD, and then you finish it off with a classic solid state. And he's like, well, aside from us needing like one more EM and one newer DMD maybe, we're pretty much there. And I'm like, yeah, that's kind of exactly what I'm thinking. So I think in the very near future, we're going to put together a plan to set up two banks like what Pinburg has in that format. And then we can flirt with making some of those tournament formats. I mean, at Pinburg, you don't have one group on one bank. You have two or three groups on a single bank. So we don't have to limit it to like an 8-player tournament. We could have a 16-player tournament, which is a rather large turnout for the Tucson area. And you know, we could do a Pinburg style event, and it's really at those numbers, it really wouldn't be that hard to run and from an administrative side. You know, you could keep track of all the paperwork pretty easily. So anyway, so that's one of the next things I had on here. My feet didn't hurt too bad. The shoes that I chose to wear, they're not terrible. They're Nike running shoes, and I've had them for a while, and they're fairly well formed to my foot, and they're not overly flattened out, or I don't know the lifespan term or whatever you want to call it on a shoe. They're not dead. And these things, they tend to start hurting my feet in like an hour, and that kind of sucks. But it's weird. Like, my heel will start to hurt, but the rest of my foot is fine. And so I'm like, you know what, I can kind of deal with that, and I'll just go find a chair or whatever. So my feet started hurting, my heel started hurting, about an hour into the event, and they never got any worse. So through 2 days of playing, my feet never got any worse. And I think that's part of the, you know, partly because I went to sit down as often as I could in between every group or every bank, every round, whatever. The Arizona group kind of discovered which table we all liked, and so we would all just kind of wander back to that one table and hang out, and everybody's sitting there hitting refresh on their phones, waiting for the next bank to be announced. And so, I mean, I did sit down a fair amount. If I was standing the absolute entire time, I probably would not be very happy about everything, but because I was able to take a break every, you know, every round, and when the competition was done as often as I wanted to, I think everything was fine. I saw a lot of people that had the rubber mats and of various types and sizes and everything. So I think, I don't know. I mean, I think there should have been like a Replay FX branded one and they just sold you that. But I know a lot of people that did bring in their own, and I know Replay was renting them out. So I don't know, maybe they just raided a Walmart and said, hey, we need 100 of these or whatever. But so, you know, you make do with what you got. But I talking to a few people, they said they really did feel that it was helping them. I mean, they don't have a comparison to make because they didn't do a Pinburg without a mat. But they said, knowing, you know, how other tournaments feel, they said that having the mat was a help. However, it was like this cumbersome rotation dance thing that people were having to do, you know, in between their banks. You kind of, they if they have a mat, they walk up to their bank and they're like, okay, hey, cool, I'm here. And then they're like, well, so do I put the mat down in front of the machine and let everybody stand on it? Do I put it over here and stand on it when I'm not playing? Or do I just pick it up every time I move and I'm the only one that stands on it? And not like, not that any of those three things is wrong. It's just like, well, I'm meeting three new people every hour and a half. You know, are all three of them going to be cool with me, like, moving this thing every time I move? Or, like, is somebody going to expect it to be in front of the game? Or is somebody not going to want it in front of the game? It was just kind of interesting, you know? And fortunately, pinball players tend to be really cool, and, you know, it's not that big of a deal. And I just, I don't know. I thought it was kind of interesting that it's just, like, I'm kind of an introverted person when it comes to being around newer people. And so I was just like, I don't know, how would I feel about that? I don't know that anybody in my groups ever had one of the mats. Somebody had one of those cool, like, tripod camping chairs, and I think that's the way to go. That's a cool idea, because they don't take up much space. There's a couple of people that had, like, collapsible chairs and stuff like that. And those, like, youth sporting event type things, you know, and you've got the armrests, and they're wide enough that they've got this mesh cup holder in them. I mean, those things, those are not tiny. And not that they were in the way in every area, but in some of the rows, it was a little tight for that, and having people standing around, I don't know. It wasn't a big deal, but the tripod folding chairs, the camping chair type thing, that was definitely, like, the way to go. That I saw one person had that, and I was like, oh, that's it right there. Because it had a strap. You could put it on your shoulder, too. So you weren't stuck carrying it if you didn't want to. So, anyways. So in my note here, let's see. It says, play more pinball. Not just amount of time, but variety in games. It takes all types to win. And this is kind of Pinburg specific. Because if you're just playing local events, then you should play those local machines and get used to them. If you're playing lots of different events all over the place, and you know there's going to be a variety of machines, it's going to be a struggle for you if you don't play as many types of machines, titles, and styles as you can, for obvious reasons. And that'll kind of come out in my commentary that's coming up a little later. So not a whole lot there, because that kind of rolls right into my next point. And it says, the difference between skill levels include combination of ball skills, game knowledge, and self-control / nerves. And I said, experience counts for a lot. So what does it... Okay, so Pinburg is a great example and a way to talk about this, because you're grouped into, in the second day, A, B, C, D divisions. So what does it take to get out of the D division and into the C. What's the difference between an A player and a B player? And it's not like there's a huge difference in some of the, or a huge change in some of the differences, because I don't know what C division was, but I think last year in Pembroke 2015, I think it was a difference of like 4 points for the whole division. I mean, that's pretty crazy, and that's not a lot. So, you know, just a single mistake can move you from being top of C to bottom of B. And do you want to be bottom of B? That's a whole nother concept. It's like, well, where do you want to be? Do you want to make the bottom C, or do you want to make top D? Because if you make top D and you get into the finals in the top 40 in D, you get your money back for the event. If you make top C, or bottom C, I'm sorry, you're going to get more points than anybody in D can possibly get, but if you don't make the finals, you get $0. So what do you want out of the event? Do you want the Whopper points, or do you want a better chance at having a free tournament and event experience? And I thought that was kind of a curious situation, because a lot of the people that I traveled with were facing that exact scenario, and I was one of them, kind of. I don't know. I just think that's kind of one of those things where it's like, I didn't even realize or think about it till after it was all said and done, and I was kind of chatting with somebody, a friend of mine from Arizona, and we were locked into our divisions, and I'm sitting there going, you're gonna get more points than I will, but you're not excelling within your division, and I am, and so I have a better chance of making finals, but you're getting more points than me no matter what. And at a big event like that, you know, there's a lot of points to go around. So, I don't know. It's just one of those interesting things. So, let's see. Experience counts for a lot in the fact that the more you do, the more you know. And so, everything is kind of dependent on, you know, how well do you react when you step up to a game and you're like, I've never played this machine. Or, like Colin said on the Flippin' podcast, he's like, well, you know, I have notes for things that I play, like, every 3 years. And I'm like, I don't even think I haven't been playing competitive pinball for 3 years, you know? It's like, that's probably a good idea. Let's take some notes. So having that experience and going back and saying, okay, I remember these shots being where I wanted to go and avoid these shots at all costs. And you know, you kind of extrapolate that into multiple games over the course of a couple of years, and you have some sort of a knowledge bank and a comfort level with various things. And this doesn't make much sense, but the post-game whatever of my last round will kind of explain this a little bit more. It'll be the Rosetta Stone of this experience for me. So that's kind of it. I can tell you I was happy to be home, because they were late nights, and I was tired every day, but I had a ton of fun. I'm super excited to find out when the ticket date is going to be for next year, so that I can put my alarm on and hopefully not be taxiing into the Vegas airport, and I can just have my alarm go off and order my tickets. And that's kind of it. You know, it was fun. It was a lot of fun, and it was worth it. It was in so many different ways. Like, financially, it probably wasn't, because it was expensive to fly and stay in a hotel. And, you know, so, like, if you're looking at it, a cost per game played, it's not the best deal if you got to travel a far way. Did you hear that? Did you? That was the sound of my printer turning on and starting to print stuff. So, hey, yeah. Way to sound professional. But anyways, where I was going with that is, you know, it's, you can't look at it, like, when I go to a Herb-style format, I'm sitting there looking at, okay, it's $2, $3, whatever a play, and I have X amount of budget, and let's make this happen and see where you go. And if it works, it works. If it doesn't, you know, whatever, and I have my budget. But with Pinburg, you don't really have, like, you have a set number of rounds that you're in, and everything beyond that is all up to you. So it's, you have to go and look at it, though, from a total experience and say, this is something that is completely unique, not just the tournament, but the event. And the people that it attracts are super cool. And when I was leaving at 4, I was going to leave the hotel at 4 o'clock in the morning on Sunday morning so I could fly back and have kind of a little bit of time to recoup, which is good because when I got home, I was just like, oh, yeah, I'm gonna crawl into bed and see what happens. And, you know, maybe I'll, like, just lay here for a little bit and be like, oh, nope, gotta get up and take care of some projects. No, I crawled into bed, and the next thing I know, it's 4 hours later. And I'm like, wow, I don't take naps. I'm not a very good nap taker. And somehow I just crashed for 4 hours, and I absolutely needed it. But I'm standing there in the lobby of the hotel, like 3:30 in the morning. I'm waiting on a friend of a friend who was from Nashville, who was super awesome. We shared an Uber on the way back to the airport because he had a flight that was like 10 minutes offset from what mine was. And it's just like, you know, it makes sense. So I was waiting for him to come on down. And Taylor Reese is sitting in the lobby with a bunch of people, and they're just drinking beer and chatting and having a great time. And, you know, Zach and Josh, like, come out of the elevators, and they're wheeling their stuff through the lobby. And I just chatted with the two of them the day before. I kind of introduced myself and said, hey, I'm the guy that runs everything in Tucson, basically. You know, I just wanted to say hi and thank you. And they're like, you know, they're two super cool guys and really nice. And they're like, oh, you know, because we've interacted. It's like, it's always nice to put a face to a name and things like that, you know. So they're wheeling their stuff out through the lobby, and they're like, bye, guys, we'll see you later. And, you know, it's just like, it's 4 o'clock in the morning, you know. It's just like, it's so weird. But that's just the way the day was. And, I mean, the hours that you have to pull at some of these things, it's just like, it completely offsets you. Because we just been kicked out, quote-unquote, kicked out of the event at 2 o'clock in the morning. I think they're supposed to close at 1:30. And at like 2:05, one of the convention center people was like, all right, everybody's got to go now. We're done for the day. So, you know, like 2 hours later, hour and a half later, I'm sitting in the hotel lobby ready to head over to get into the airport. So, anyways, I mean, that's kind of part of the experience. And that's what makes it fun, because people are in this hobby are a lot of fun. And if you're shy about talking to people, you're not going to have the opportunities to have those experiences as much as somebody else who's out there and is willing to kind of step in front of Roger Sharp and say, hi, you're Roger Sharp, and I'm going to ramble for 5 minutes and forget my name. So, yeah. But you know what? You make those connections, and now, you know, if I see Roger again, I can say hi. You know, I met you in Pinburg, and it's nice to see you at another event, and, you know, whatever. And if you see him at a bar, it's like, dude, Roger, what kind of beer do you drink? Because I'll buy you one, type of thing. And, you know, it's pinball folks are cool, and that's what makes this hobby fun. So, anyways, I'm gonna do a little bit of an explanation, saying, hey, this is my, and we're going to cut to my clip of, I think it's like 5 minutes or less than 5 minutes, of me after my tournament time is done, and kind of some really quick post-game recap and kind of what happened with everything and how where I stood with how the whole weekend was going up to that point. So, yeah, so here it is. And again, thanks for tuning in. Oh, yeah, I'm not going to do an outro after this, but if you want to hit me up, it's wayne@tucsonpinball.com, or find me on Facebook, find us on Facebook. I think I do that every time. Tucson Pinball on Facebook, and we have a web page at tucsonpinball.com, and I think that's pretty much it. So, yeah, here's my post-game, and thanks for tuning in. We'll talk to you next time. Bye. My Pinburg tournament has come to an end. All right, so it is, what, Saturday morning, and I made C finals. I qualified 27th, and first bank, we played Ghostbusters, Faces, which is an older EM, and then we played Roadshow and Harlem Globetrotters. Ghostbusters was not all that great. I got a 0 on it, which is weird, because I probably have the most experience on it. You could tell by the group
you know, guys kind of knew, and gals, knew what they were doing, kind of, but not entirely. And I'm just like, I know everything I want to do. And the bounces are a lot different. they were a lot different than my machine. And I just missed shots. I mean, it's not the machine's fault. I just missed shots. I got the ball under control, and plan A didn't work, so I went to plan B after the skill shot disappeared. And, you know, you got to make your shots in order to score points. So I didn't score points and got a zero on that one. On faces, that was really interesting. Ended up coming in second on that one, so got 2 points out of that. Let's see, after that, Roadshow, I've never played in person, so that was rough. I got a zero on that one, and I got what I would consider at least 2 house balls. First ball, I got a ball save. And then the other 2, which drained just as fast, if not quicker, no ball save. So that was kind of confusing and whatever. But just goes to show that, you know, even these 25-year-old machines, some people don't have access to them and have no idea how to play them, and I'm one of them. Our last game was Harlem Globetrotters, and I came in 3rd on that one. I think I was a good spinner shot or 2 away from coming in 2nd. First place was kind of a runaway. Not too far, but I think he was already in at that point anyways. Game 4 was just kind of a, you know, dead man walking situation. I knew I wasn't going to make it, and I was just, you know, shoot the spinner, have fun, and everything was good. So overall, Pinburg experience has been great so far. I don't even have to leave yet. The tournament's over for me, and I'm going to stay and watch, and the floor is open, so I'm going to go play all the games that I don't get a chance to play or that I want to play more, and it's a huge venue. It's awesome. I'll be back next year. I had a ton of fun. I won a couple $100, which is always cool, and actually, I was the only person from my state group to make it into my respective finals. We had representation in every division. And some players had great early games and rougher later days, and others had rough early games and better later in the day. And I don't think I played great most of the time, but I guess I played just good enough to get in. Like I said, I was seeded 27 and top 40 get in, so that's the way everything ended. So all in all, it's been a really fun experience. Everything's really well run, really well set up, you know. So big kudos to Bowen, who is the face of everything, because he's kind of emceeing everything, and he's the person everybody recognizes. But the techs have been great, the staff have been great, it's really well run. And, you know, the vendor area is pretty sweet. Got to meet the Double Danger guys and picked up a shirt from them that I wanted. They're the ones that did the t-shirts, the Tucson Pinball t-shirts for me. So I chatted with them a couple times throughout the course of the weekend, and they're really cool guys. So hope to see them in future shows and chat with them some more. And yeah, I mean, all in all, this is the best tournament of the year for a reason. And I don't want to... It's kind of a double-edged sword, because it's limited entry, and it's just like, yeah, everybody come to this tournament, but buy your ticket after I get mine, because I want to make sure I get my ticket to be back here next year. So it's, you know, when they open up the tickets, it's ready, set, go, and you only have a couple hours before your opportunity is gone. So, you know, set your alarm early and be ready to pull the trigger on getting that ticket, and we'll see you guys next year. So it's been awesome. I'll talk to you later.